Christians, and we're proud to be working in a volunteer capacity with this esteemed group of organizations and individuals. My team and I like to think of ourselves as friends of Truth Fiduciary Advisors and allied institutions, and so we're happy to be here in this role. But before we get started, I'd like to just go over a couple of housekeeping notes. So number one, all of the attendees' lines are in listen-only mode, so you don't need to worry about background noise. And panelists, if you still have not muted your lines, if you could do that until it's your time to speak, that would cut down the background noise. Anyone on this line can use the chat box. It's on your console to the right, and you can use that to ask a question either privately to the moderator or to all the panelists. But I prefer that if you would please make those to me, Marie Swift, as the moderator. I will be reading them and triaging them as time goes through, as we go through today's program. If you do not want me to name you individually or by outlet, just let me know when you chat your note, your question, and I would be happy to honor that. Some of you may prefer to be anonymous. And if you would actually like to come off of mute at the Q&A portion of our conversation today and to dialogue with the panelists in person, just let me know in your chat box message and I will take you off of mute. The recording of this virtual press conference will be sent to each of you about 1 hour after the conclusion. We need a little bit of time to transcode the recording and to get that out to you. And just in case any of you needs help, here is my personal cell phone number. If you'd like to write it down, it's 913-961-4030, 913-961-4030, and you can text message me throughout this broadcast if you need help. Of course, you can also call my office at 1-800-974-7753. So, to let you know who we have here participating in this call today, we have a representative from Market Council, someone from Financial Engines, which is also merging with Edelman Financial Services, so that's why I put both of those URLs and acknowledge both firms. We have a representative from Pagneto Carp, a wealth management firm. We have the CEO of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, the leader of the Garrett Planning Network. XY Planning Network could not be here today, but they do send their best and they're still supporting the cause. And they would be happy to take questions or queries in a telephone conversation or email if you'd like to speak to Alan Moore or Michael Kitsis. We have a board member from the ACP, the Alliance of Comprehensive Planners, leader for the Committee for the Fiduciary Standard, and then, of course, Knut Rostat, whom I believe all of you know from the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard. So here are our photos, so you can see in a quick screenshot who we have here on the line. And we're hoping that Bob Clark has joined us by now. Let me just tell you a little bit about Bob, and then I will hand it over to Bob if he has made it in. I know he was having a little technical difficulties, and if he's not here, then Knut will take over. But Bob Clark is formerly Editor-in-Chief for Dow Jones Investment Advisor and Financial Planning Magazines. He is a longtime friend of Fiduciary Advisors, and he will be moderating the panelists' presentations along with the Q&A in the second half of today's call. And Bob has had a long and successful career as editor and consultant in the financial services industry. So if you just Google his name, then you will see. Thank you, Cheryl. I see your note that you're not seeing the screen. All right. And so without further ado, Bob, are you here? Okay. Knut, while I get the screens up and running, will you please begin with your preliminary comments?
Sure. Well, thank you, Marie, for organizing this event and getting all the groups together. I have Bob's remarks, which he just emailed me in case he could not get on. And so I will go through them. But as everybody knows, that I am not Bob. Here's the gist of Bob's remarks. I've been covering the independent advisory industry since the early 1980s. Back then, virtually all independents were brokers who affiliated with so-called independent broker-dealers, that allowed them to own their own advisory businesses, but to hang the securities licenses to the DB. This arrangement afforded advisors a degree of independence. In theory, they could switch BDs if their BD pressured them. So many BDs considered the clients to be theirs and would aggressively try to hold on to them. The other threat to advisor independence was so-called payout percentage. That is the portion of commissions and latter AUM fees advisors generated that the BD paid out to the advisors. Back then, payouts ranged from 25 to 90% at the BD's discretion, which on a half a million to a million in commissions could make a substantial difference and gave BDs considerable control over their affiliated advisors. Also, back in the early 80s, a small group of these independent advisors became dissatisfied with their lack of total independence and decided to create a new business model for retail advisors, one in which they would register as RIAs and charge their clients a flat fee or hourly fees for their advice and making them totally independent of outside conflicts and responsible only to their clients. They formed an organization called the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAFA, which is still going strong and I'm happy to say is represented here today. The launch of NAFA was the beginning of a clear distinction between client-centered financial advisors and retail sales for middle market investors. As you might imagine, charging advisory clients hourly or quarterly fees wasn't as lucrative as the commissions generated by selling packaged products such as tax shelters, variable annuity, and later mutual funds. But as the great bull market of the 1980 surged and mutual funds became popular, Schwab launched its financial advisor services program that enabled independent RIAs to charge AUM fees paid directly out of their clients' accounts and launched the independent RIA boom, further increasing the differences and the distinction between independent advisors and brokers. Although Wall Street initially considered portfolio management for retail investors to be a cottage business, by the 1990s, RIA market share was growing so quickly that the first Merrill Lynch and then other wirehouses had introduced retail AUM programs of their own. And this entree into retail asset management business marked the beginning of the erosion of the distinction between retail brokers and independent advisors that the independents had been building for preceding 20 years, which is the reason that we are all here today. When brokers started managing their retail investment portfolios, they became fiduciaries, part-time fiduciaries for their clients. Brokers are fiduciaries when they manage client portfolios, but not when they sell investment stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, etc., that go in them. I'm sure you can see how this is dramatically different from the full-time RIAs who are required by law to act in the best interest of their clients at all times. And despite the brokerage industry's unsuccessful attempt to extend the 40 Act broker exemption from a fiduciary duty on retail sales, the current part-time fiduciary duty has increased investor confusion over being sold versus getting best interest advice and encourage the SEC's current attempt to harmonize broker and RIA regulation. The Institute for the Fiduciary Standard and the participants today, including myself, strongly oppose this harmonization and strongly encourage the journalists in the audience to make sure their readers understand what's at stake with this new proposal. So that is Bob Clark's statement, which I have read in his absence, and hopefully he will be joining the call shortly. So this is Knut Rostad from the Institute for the Fiduciary Standard, and now I will turn over to my statement in terms of introducing the theme and topic that you'll be hearing from various individuals today. So I start off, of course, thanking Bob for his remarks, and then go on from there. And I also want to thank our RIA Campaign for Investors Advisor groups and speakers with us today. I'll offer some opening comments for today's press conference. The bottom line is this: just as with butchers and dietitians, or car dealers and consumer reports, advisors and brokers have intrinsically different roles. This is no news flash here. Congratulations to SEC Chairman Clayton for proposing these rules. They're welcome, but as various commissioners suggested, they can be much improved. We at the Institute will continue discussing ways to do so with the SEC. They're long in coming. On June 18, 2009, that's right, 9 years ago, one day after the Treasury Department recommended holding brokers' advice to the fiduciary standard, then SEC Chair Mary Shapiro embraced it. Chair Shapiro also said at the time, brokers and advisors were merging to be in certain respects indistinguishable. This view has leaked into the standards. From former SEC Commissioner Paredes and SEC staffers Bob Plays and David Blass, in 2014, Blass said, quote, "I don't think that the advisor fiduciary duty is higher than suitability," unquote. In 2015, in a Wall Street Journal interview, SEC Chair Mary Jo White noted that brokers and advisors for their, quote, "essentially identical conduct," unquote. This is just not right, and investors get that it's not right. According to FA Magazine, retired Naval Officer Brian Smith, who attended the recent investor roundtable in Washington, D.C. just last week and heard the SEC staff's explanations, had this to say, quote, "There was significant concern over the SEC saying brokers were acting in the customer's best interest as opposed to an advisor acting as a fiduciary. This is very confusing and misleading. Saying someone is acting in your best interest when they may well be acting in their own best interest is just misleading," unquote. Officer Smith's comments hit the mark. After all, the legal, contractual, business, and cultural differences divide brokers and advisors. Brokerage sales representing manufacturers is not the same as fiduciary advice representing investors. These differences are long standard and hardly controversial. Investment counselors who helped craft the Advisors Act of 1940 knew it. They thought investors would confuse real advisors, and as one report of that time said, quote, "tipsters and touts," unquote. The recent Fifth Circuit court decision echoed these differences. That is, the confidential and intimate nature of fiduciary advice contrasts with, quote, contrasts with advice that is, quote, merely as an incident to their broker-dealer activities, unquote. These differences are natural, such as 2 versus 3. Our RIA Campaign for Investors highlights relationships of 2 versus 3. Advisors are fiduciaries to clients and must be loyal at all times. No hidden partners, period. That's 2. Brokers are paid commissions to make sales to distribute issued securities to investors, period. That's 3. To gloss over these differences is just not right. So we urge SEC commissioners and Chairman Clayton to listen to Officer Smith and to listen to other investors. Review the wisdom in the 40 Act. Restate how relationships of 2 and 3 differ. Reread Daniel Henninger's 2012 piece, No Guardrails Again, with damaged and traumatized investors in mind. Mr. Chairman, rebuild the 40 Act wall. To be clear, this is not about claiming conflict-free. We don't believe there are any Mary Poppins advisors. This is about understanding the essential destructive nature of material conflicts. The best advisors work hard to avoid these conflicts. They do because they get what Carlo DeFlorio, then the SEC OC director, meant when he said in 2012, quote, conflicts can be thought of as viruses that threaten the organization's well-being. And if not eliminated or neutralized, even the simplest virus is a mortal threat to the body, unquote. Going after me, you will hear other advisors or those representing advisors on exactly what this means. So with that, I say thank you and hand over the microphone to our next speaker, which is, I believe, Patty Houlihan.
If I could, I jump in here for a minute, Knut,
yep.
And we
yep.
do have the visuals reestablished, and I would like to draw the attendees' attention to the handout tab on your console. There are two handouts there, one of which is this PDF, and this is, Knut, you wanted to mention, it's the theoretical, the hypothetical language.
Well, yeah. I wanted to reference this in terms of highlighting that the fact that the SEC proposals, as they describe advisors and brokers, I think speaks strongly for itself in terms of how similar they are, and also to highlight the fact that this factor in these proposals is not new, and in a sense should not have been unexpected. Because, as noted here, at least since 2009, leadership at the SEC has expressed these views. So thank you, Marie.
Okay. Thank you. And so we'll hear next quick statements from the Committee for the Fiduciary Standard, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, Garrett Planning Network, and as we mentioned, XY Planning Network is not here today to comment. Lastly, we'll have a comment from the Alliance of Comprehensive Planners. So, Patty, would you please make your statement? Patty Houlihan, we don't hear you. If you would unmute your line.
Yes, thank you.
There you go.
The Committee for the Fiduciary Standard is made up of all volunteers, and we have been engaged since 2009 with the SEC and the DOL. We feel strongly that all brokers who hold out as an advisor or advisor or a term like that and are giving financial advice are not giving advice that's solely incidental. Such brokers should be held to the fiduciary standard under the Investment Advisor Act of 1940. I have been a financial advisor for over 35 years and have seen many different business models. Early in my career, I held Series 7, Series 26, 63, and 65 licenses, as well as an insurance license. I have taught students from all different business models in preparation for the CFP exam. To suggest that all advisors giving investment advice cannot be held to the same fiduciary standard as is in the Investment Act of 1940 is simply wrong. There are huge differences in brokers who recommend products in their best interest and fiduciary advisors who are in a trusted relationship and give personal advice that is best for the client. To blur the lines between brokers and fiduciary advisors is not what the SEC should be doing. The proposed regulation, best interest, is very misleading because it sounds like a fiduciary standard. In fact, it is not. A law that gives the public the impression that brokers are acting in their best interest when, in fact, they may not be, is the worst of all outcomes. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Patty. And next we'll go to Jeff Brown. Jeff, would you make your statement, please?
Thank you, Marie. NAPFA is the country's leading professional association of fee-only comprehensive financial planners with more than 3,000 members across the United States. Since its founding in 1983, NAPFA has embraced the high ideals of delivering independent, objective advice in the client's best interests. NAPFA is committed to and our members adhere to high professional standards, including a code of ethics and strict fiduciary oath, which NAPFA members are required to reaffirm annually. Following the NAPFA fiduciary oath means that advisors always act in good faith and with candor, be proactive in disclosing any conflicts of interest that may impact the client, and not accept any compensation contingent upon the purchase or sale of a financial product. Since its inception, NAPFA has been a staunch advocate for fiduciary principles. Working under fiduciary principles is the most transparent and, we believe, the most objective way of serving the public. Consumers have come to expect fiduciary-level advice and should be able to count on the SEC to deliver rule proposals that truly affirm that expectation. We feel that the current proposal from the Commission falls short in addressing the lack of transparency and the need for increased consumer understanding. The proposals do not include the necessary bright lines which retail investors can easily use to distinguish investment advisors who must at all times provide service under a fiduciary standard from registered representatives of broker-dealers who are not required to do so and whose advice under the suitability standard can be littered with conflicts of interest. Given the changes in the marketplace for financial services in the nearly eight decades since the Advisors Act became law in 1940, it makes sense for the SEC now to clarify and reaffirm that there are differences between investment advisors who provide advice to retail investors under a fiduciary standard and registered representatives who do not. By not doing so, consumer understanding is muddied even further, and there is an increased risk for harm to investors.
Thank you, Jeff. And next we'll go to Cheryl Garrett. Cheryl, would you deliver your statement, please?
Yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Cheryl Garrett, I'm the founder of the Garrett Planning Network, and we're a nationwide network of hourly-based fiduciary advisors who serve people on our focus is accessibility. We turn no one away due to arbitrary minimums. So we serve beginners, middle market clientele, and do-it-yourselfers, and a lot of people in between. One of the things that, as Patty mentioned, my experience is over 30 years in the business. I have been in many different delivery channels and seen a lot of ways that advice is rendered. I've also been involved in one of the founding persons with the Committee for the Fiduciary Standard since 2009. Over approximately that same period or a little longer, I've also worked in doing some litigation consulting and expert witness work, testifying on behalf of investors and savers who have been taken advantage of by inappropriate advice, or alleged inappropriate advice, that is. And so that definitely gave me a really good view of the underbelly of our industry. I strongly believe that we need the clients, the public, the society deserves fiduciary advice for all. This concept that, you know, people are out there rendering advice and there's two different schemes of laws or rules under which we work. It just doesn't even, I mean, the industry can't keep it straight. How in the world would the consumer of this advice be able to keep it straight? This concept of using the term best interest, it sounds really great. But if you ask the person on the street, what would you rather have, somebody who's required to work in your best interest or a fiduciary? I'm afraid that the lack of understanding of what fiduciary means, people would pick best interest. It sounds like what they're looking for. And sometimes we fiduciaries use that as shorthand for what fiduciary means, but actually it's much more than that. So I am very proud to be joining with these other organizations and voices to help RIAs and chosen fiduciaries, fiduciaries by choice and by law, to help raise our voices to speak to the SEC and say why it is that we want everyone to have the same, as they sometimes say, you have a competitive advantage because you're a fiduciary. Come join us. We don't care. Every client deserves fiduciary advice. End of story.
Thank you, Cheryl. And now we'll go to Frankie Corrado from the ACP. Frankie.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, everyone, for joining today for this important conversation. My name is Frankie Corrado, and I'm representing the Alliance of Comprehensive Planners, ACP, a community of independent, comprehensive, and fee-only certified financial planners who have been providing unbiased, client-first advice for over 25 years. Our organization echoes the comments that have been made here today so far. Unlike our brokerage counterparts, ACP advisors do not sell products, take commissions, or receive referral fees in any way. Our advisors are holistic in their planning outlook, focusing on a client's entire situation and providing recommendations to help them reach the important milestones in their lives. The importance of being a fiduciary is a foundational element of ACP. It's literally written into our organization's charter. And it's not because of any rule or any law. It's because it is doing what is right by the client, plain and simple. ACP feels very strongly about putting our clients' best interest ahead of our own. And we do this by avoiding conflicts of interest in the client relationship, aspiring to the highest standard of ethics, and being transparent in both our business practices and how we are compensated. Our organization has been deeply disappointed in the lack of willpower by our governing body to establish any kind of regulatory system that protects the American public from the abuse that can arise when a fiduciary relationship is not present. The false narrative being presented by the SEC that there are minimal differences between a broker and an RIA abiding by fiduciary standards is flat out wrong, and it needs to be addressed. Our organization is proud to stand here today with some of the great other organizations here as well, who are committed to doing right by their clients, avoiding these conflicts of interest, and really urging the SEC to clarify these proposed rules, specifically in the comparisons that it makes between brokers and RIAs.
Thank you, Frankie. And as we mentioned, the XY Planning Network wish they could be here today, but scheduling conflicts did not allow. So we will get a statement from the XY Planning Network at some point, or if you are a journalist on the line, you'd like to reach out to someone at XY Planning Network, please feel free to do so. Today's featured speakers are Christopher Jones from Financial Engines, David Karp from Pagnotto Karp, and Brian Hamburger from Market Council. So without further ado, we'd like to go right to Christopher Jones. Christopher, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Marie. Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Jones. I'm the Chief Investment Officer for Financial Engines. We were founded in 1996 by Bill Sharpe, winner of the Nobel Prize in Economics in 1990, and Joseph Grunfest, a former SEC commissioner and now professor of law at Stanford University. Financial Engines is the largest independent registered investment advisor in America. Today, we serve over 1.1 million clients on a discretionary basis with over $169 billion in assets under management, including both retail assets and defined contribution assets at more than 750 of the largest companies in America. We serve about 40,000 retail customers, and this week we'll be joining forces with Edelman Financial Services to further expand our reach. Together, the combined company will have over 330 advisors in over 180 locations across the country and assets under management of over $192 billion. Financial Engines was founded with the goal of providing unbiased, affordable, high-quality, personalized investment advice to everyday working Americans. Unlike many RIA firms, our average balance is only about $150,000, and our median client has a balance of only about $67,000. Our clients are the people with the greatest need for unbiased advisory help in order to help them make the most of what they've saved and invested. For all of our advisory services throughout our history, both for ERISA and retail assets, Financial Engines has always acted as a fiduciary to our clients. Our experience over the last two decades demonstrates that it's possible to put the interests of advisors first, or investors first, while still achieving solid business results. We applaud the Commission's decision to clarify the standards of care applicable to investment advisors and broker-dealers when providing advice to retail customers, and to require investment advisors and broker-dealers to provide important disclosures regarding actual and potential conflicts of interest. We agree strongly with the Commission's decision to clarify the standard of care applicable to investment advisors when providing advice to retail customers. The current regulatory landscape makes it too easy for unscrupulous, conflicted service providers to claim to be providing unbiased investment advice while simultaneously pushing clients towards products that are more profitable for the service provider or that may not be in the best interest of the customer. It is Financial Engine's belief that the application of a single unified fiduciary standard for all investment recommendations, both in the workplace and in the retail markets, would establish a regulatory framework in which recommendations would always be required to be in the customer's best interest. However, while we believe that strong action is needed to address the current regulatory gaps, we believe a weak in-name-only best interest standard would actually prove to be more detrimental to retail customers than the status quo, as it would allow additional marketing cover for conflicted service providers to act against the best interests of their clients. While we support the adoption of a strong SEC advice rule, in our view, the proposal would be stronger and would be able to better protect retail customers if certain key terms in the proposed rule were clarified. Specifically, we believe that without clearly defining the terms best interest and recommendation, the rule will be inconsistently applied by broker-dealers and may present opportunities for abuse. We strongly urge the Commission to adopt clear definitions for both of these key terms in the final rule. We also support the prohibition on the uses of the terms advisor, by broker-dealers to describe themselves when communicating with retail customers. We also believe that there are other terms frequently used in the industry, including manager and planner, that are similarly problematic, and we encourage the Commission to address the use of such terms by folks that are not providing advice under a fiduciary standard. Financial Engines believes that the SEC advice rule will not have the desired impact on broker-dealer activity unless it is accompanied by a strong enforcement mechanism giving the Commission the right to penalize broker-dealers for compliance failures. Accordingly, we encourage the Commission to consider a robust enforcement mechanism in the final version of the rule. We look forward to sharing with the SEC the enhancements we believe will help strengthen this rule, and we encourage other fiduciary advisors to act accordingly in writing to the SEC. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Christopher. And David Karp, you're up. The floor is yours.
Yes, thank you. This is David Karp. I'm the founding partner at Pagnato Karp. Myself and my partner have the unique lens of having been on both sides of the wall, and some would say with certain levels of success. We had north of 15 years practicing with a large money center wirehouse bank, and we have 8 years of being, if you will, a registered investment advisor. Prior to 3 years ago, we were affiliated with a platform, and about 2.5, 3 years ago, we separated ourselves and we became what we refer to ourselves as true fiduciaries to the marketplace. Having been on both sides of the wall with an ability to have a keen understanding as to how the proverbial sausage is made, I can tell you unequivocally that the client does not have an understanding about what the term fiduciary means and the difference between fiduciary and the standard of suitability. If one were to just go do a simple Wikipedia search or a dictionary search for the definition of the word broker, a broker is an individual person who arranges transactions between a buyer and seller for a commission when the deal is executed. I can tell you that one of the principles of our firm and part of the reason we made the plunge and we made the conversion over to be a fully independent registered investment advisor is because it was a daunting task placed upon us when a client who may have been investing for longer than you have been alive turns over the keys to their kingdom or their life's work and asks you for help in taking care of their family. One does become quite conflicted when you do realize that you are operating on a platform or a system that frankly is not equipped or designed to provide that solution. I will tell you that one of the missions that we have as a firm is to educate the public, and we've taken initiatives through social media and different affiliations, is just an understanding about how the delay or an attempt to repeal the fiduciary rule can be translated to the regulatory environment telling the investing public that it is okay to put their interests second. And one of the messages that we do attempt to communicate to the community is that by repealing or delaying this fiduciary rule to which we hold so dear, is in effect saying it is okay to put broker or advisor's interests before that of their client. I would like to go as far as to say that the industry is set up through the advances in technology, through the sophistication in the investment community, where the independent firms and the fiduciaries can, without a doubt, unequivocally service clients to the extent of a large money center or wirehouse bank with the obligation, the legal obligation, to put those clients' interests first. There's a disconnect. It's a problem. The firms are using wordsmithing to try to negate the impact of fiduciary. I sit in interviews all day long with prospective clients where clients actually believe their broker is a fiduciary because the wirehouse firms or the brokers use words like, of course, I will always put your interest first. Yes, we do have fiduciary services. I act like a fiduciary every day. Very seldom, if ever, do they say, I am a fiduciary in the legal sense in every aspect in which we engage. I do believe, and we do believe as a firm, the public needs to be educated. The message needs to be clarified. Titles need to be brought to bear so that they are clear, they are defining, and they bring the transparency that the investing public deserves, merely because one wouldn't think this level of wordsmithing would be permissible in a regulated industry. Thank you.
Thank you, David. And Brian Hamburger, we'll go to you now. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Marie. I sat here with great interest listening to everyone's perspectives on the current proposed rule in front of us and the notion of acting as fiduciary. And if you were listening with a keen ear, you would note some rather slight differences between the perspectives of all the folks on the line. That said, somewhere between 80 to 90% of those opinions are aligned with one another. I'm here, oddly as it may seem, at the end, to furnish a bit of a historical perspective. So rather than start with where we are now, let me, oblige me if you will, and walk back with me to the 1930s when the current framework was devised. Because I think you'll see that the differences, the distinctions between independent financial advisors or investment advisors and brokers was deliberate. In the 1930s, the SEC viewed brokers as transactional, that is, sales-based, what they called episodic, or transaction by transaction. Broker-dealers and their agents, so brokers as agents of the broker-dealers or registered representatives, owe their primary duty and allegiance to the firm. They have a duty of loyalty to their employer. The firm also has duties that are different than that of the, or that may supersede those in that, into that of the customer, including typically fiduciary duty that owe to their shareholders. Investment advisors offer an ongoing or holistic advice based upon the client's overall financial situation and in the context of their overall portfolio. So contrary to the broker dealers, an investment advisor's responsibility is solely to their clients, not their employer, and anyone acting as a representative of an advisor continues to have a primary obligation to the client, not the employer, and they have an unwavering obligation to act in the best interests of their clients at all times. Let's fast forward a bit to a time where I can actually remember, and by the 1990s, both competition and technology effectively decreased commissions dramatically. Brokers started offering very similar services to one another, and they needed a more enticing wrapper to those services, which was an asset-based fee. So they started charging an asset-based fee for which previously they were charging a transaction-based fee, that was declining precipitously. Regulators at the time sat on the sidelines when brokers started calling themselves advisors, consultants, financial planners, asset managers, you name it. We actually have a slide from the year 2000 that we chuckle about here in the office because we did a survey of what every firm calls their registered representatives, and none of them were anywhere close to broker or registered representative. The titles, in and of themselves, they advised an advisory rather than a sales relationship with the clients. And so it's no surprise that clients thought they were getting more than the transaction. Now, in 2006, the SEC actually commissioned a study, generally referred to as the RAND report. And when they conducted the study, they reached the conclusions that weren't surprising to anyone who had even a slight interest in this space, which is that the distinction between investment advisors and broker-dealers have become blurred in the eyes of the public, and that market participants had difficulty determining whether a financial professional was an investment advisor or a broker-dealer. And they believe that investment advisors and broker-dealers offered practically the same services and were subject to the same legal standards of care. We are confident here at Market Council that a similar type of study would yield similar, if not identical or worse, results. Investor confusion remains, and it is rampant. So following that 2006 study, 2008 happened. And investors, many of them for the first time, learned as they called their brokers clamoring for advice in a quickly declining market, that all of this time they'd been paying an asset-based fee, not for advice, but merely for brokerage services where the advice was being delivered incidental to the securities transactions within their portfolio. You could take a freeze frame of that moment in time, and it's almost the exact situation that exists today. The issues we see with the best interest proposal in its current form is that investor confusion will continue to remain, mostly because the term best interest will be confused with the fiduciary standard. You certainly can't expect to extrapolate two of the most important words that make up the fiduciary standard and have them mean something different. But the best interest standard is not a fiduciary standard at all. Fiduciaries put their clients' interests ahead of their own, whereas under Reg BI, it means the broker-dealer can't put their interest ahead of their client. Fiduciaries, they have a duty of loyalty, whereas Reg BI, that loyalty only applies at the time of that transaction. And by the way, not all transactions are covered under Reg BI, like unsolicited trades. In short, this proposed standard makes investors feel that they're getting what is best for them when they're only getting what's not necessarily harmful to them. It's akin to me making health claims about diet soda. Best interest has not been defined. No example has been given of any situation that today is permissible under suitability standard that will be impermissible under the best interest standard. Meaning the meaning here is in the eye of the beholder. And unfortunately, that perspective is different, depends on who you ask. We only need to take a look at three of the commissioners who have spoken about this to see how acute that problem could be. Commissioner Stein says that the best interest standard says that, quote, it maintains the status quo and the emperor has no clothes, end quote. But if you ask Commissioner Pierce, she labeled it as, quote, suitability plus, end quote.
Plus.
And then Commissioner Clayton says, quote, it's definitely a fiduciary principle, just like the fiduciary duty in the investment advisor space is a fiduciary principle, end quote. Rulemaking package gives best interest standard to brokers and standard of conduct for investment advisors gives it to advisors. That's the position of the commissioner. In addition to that, there are standards that would force investment advisors to compel them to engage in continuing education, despite the fact that you could ask any person within the financial services space And there tends not to be a real gap in the education level for registered investment advisor. Nonetheless, between that continuing education requirement and a proposed net capital requirement, they do the same exact thing as the best interest standard does for brokers. It provides clients with a false sense of benefit and a false sense of security. It allows them to rest assured that whom they're working for is acting in their best interest, whom they're working for is adequately funded to cover any liability, and whom they're working for is adequately educated. The action we'd like advisors to take at this point in responding to the SEC is to engage with them and write a comment, not a form comment, not a copy and paste, because the SEC will merely count them, but actually file a real comment on the proposed regulation best interest. The due date is August 7th, and we at Market Council have no reason to believe that that comment period will be extended. Thanks for the opportunity. Marie?
Thank you. And we do have a couple of questions for those who are on the line. If you'd like to come off of mute or ask a question, please use the console, the question box. The panelists are currently on mute so that we could cut down on interference. But Brian, while I've got you unmuted, I have a question that you could kick off with, and then I'll unmute the rest of the panelists and they can chime in as well. So why bring the government into this? Why can't the marketplace handle this on its own?
Well, that certainly wasn't my call. I didn't call the police. The SEC has acted on their own to engage in this rulemaking proposal. In fact, we could certainly substantiate the position that it was the SEC who turned a blind eye towards asset-based brokerage fees and allowed broker-dealers to start to market the advisory services without being held to a fiduciary principle and a standard of care that led us here. That's the road that led us here. So instead of taking a strong view at the time when this came up and separate the utility of brokers and advisors, what the SEC chose to do is to blur those lines. And we're now facing the ramifications of just that. And so now we're in a situation where the SEC is proposing, let's continue to blur the lines, and let's remove the ramification for a client deciding whether to work with a broker or an advisor. And we at Market Council say it's not too late to actually come up with the right answer. And so that's what we're proposing here.
And to add to Brian's comments, back when I was, this is Patty Houlihan, back when I was chair of CFP board in 2001, we invited Bob Plays to come and to address the CFP Board of Governors over this very issue, Brian. And you've described it exactly correctly, and I would say that Bob described it pretty much that way as well. When we asked why the broker community was starting to sound like us by calling themselves advisors, wealth managers, financial planners, whatever, and that they were still taking the incidental position, we said, how is it that we as registered investment advisors under the Act of 40 are fiduciaries and brokers are doing and looking and sounding like us, and they're saying they're under a suitability standard? Bob's response was very interesting. He said, Patty, from the Act of 1934, which covers brokers, and the suitability standard, he said, we wanted them to become more like the registered investment advisor community that was regulated under the Act of 40. And as they started to migrate in that direction and started to offer services the way we wanted them to, we didn't want to, in essence, get them all under the tent and then drop the tent down on them and say, gotcha. He said they were being regulated under the Act of 1934. They were doing what we wanted them to do, and that's why they weren't pushing that issue. And that was from Bob. And he was at the SEC, as you know, at that time.
And Patty, just this, Brian, just to add context to that, right? What Bob was dealing with back then, the biggest problem that plagued the brokerage industry, aside from what you would hear from their perspective, which was, you know, declining margins, the biggest problem that the SEC was dealing with was the issue of churning, right? Which is really not an issue at all anymore. But this notion that brokers were engaged in securities transactions merely to generate commission revenue was the issue du jour that the SEC was dealing with. And I mean, it's plain as day if you take a look at the enforcement actions that were going on at those times. And so in an effort to quell that, the SEC unknowingly really opened up Pandora's box. They really did invite them into the tent without holding them to the same standards as the other invitees to the RIA party.
Absolutely.
I want to make sure that we get these questions from Melanie read to you. And Melanie, if you want me to take you off mute, please raise your hand in your control panel. And Mark, I see you would like to come off mute in just a minute. But let me just read you Melanie's two questions in the control panel. And all of the panelists, you are off mute. So Knut, why don't we let you take a stab at this, and then somebody who hasn't spoken for a while can follow on to Knut. Two questions. Number one from Melanie. In your meetings with SEC Chair Clayton and the commissioners, have you gotten any assurance that Reg BI will change substantially from its current form? If so, how? And her second question is, two former SEC officials have said that a uniform fiduciary standard would have been pretty much impossible to implement. Is that true? If not, how can it be achieved?
Good questions, Melanie. I think that our sense from the meeting with Chairman Clayton was very much the sense that he has that he's projected over the last 2 months regarding his proposal. And I think it's so clear that this is a reflection of his view of the world, for the simple reason that right now, at this moment, there's exactly one vote for the proposal in terms of being a final proposal. So our sense was that he believes that he has sort of threaded the needle between the two sides by doing what he's done in these 900 pages. I think he's very confident that he's done the right thing, and that it's not clear to us that he believes there needs to be major changes, even though, as Brian mentioned, if you just look at the statements of the other three commissioners who are still there, perhaps Commissioner Stein will be gone before a final vote, there needs to be major reconstruction. So I think that's the key point. And then to the second question, I would say I'm not quite, you know, this ongoing discussion between a uniform standard versus what we have right now. I'm somehow thinking that it's more of a debating discussion point in terms of what we get at the end of the day. And what we get at the end of the day, and you just have to look at Reg BI and look at how little is required, is basically that the broker-dealer community can pretty much do exactly what they're doing today and fulfill those requirements. And this is exactly what SIFMA talked about in their letter, sort of their map going forward of July 2011. If you go look at that letter, they laid it all out in terms of what the world looks like as a uniform standard for brokers, and it's pretty much what we have today. So the bottom line is, regardless of whether you call it a uniform standard or regardless whether you call it a broker standard, what we have is a standard that requires the broker dealers to do very little differently than they're doing today and get the labeling that they're looking for, in this case, best interest standard. So anyway, that's how I would take a look at it. Anybody else want to comment?
Melanie, did that answer your question? If not, please raise your hand and I'll take you off mute. Okay, Mark, I'm going to take you off mute so you can ask your question live. Okay, Mark, you're muted.
Wait, hold on just a second. Thanks for hosting the call. I have a follow-up to Melanie's question. So you're asking investment advisors to write in comment letters. Do you think it will amount to anything? Or if they do write these letters, is it just going to be a futile effort because Chairman Clayton's not interested in changing regulation best interest anyway? And then I have a follow-up after the answer.
Good question, Mark. I guess two immediate thoughts. I don't think we have any illusions about how challenging it will be to change course here on the one hand. On the other hand, if you look at, I think, past experience with letter writing, that thoughtful, precise, personalized letters from investment advisors, from RIAs who are concerned about what's going on, I think they will make a dent. And it's not about the numbers. This is not about turning on the mimeograph machine, but it is about getting thoughtful, personalized, specific letters that really talks about what an individual RIA is doing, what they're not doing, and how they differ from brokers. So yeah, I think those letters can make a difference. Did you have a follow-up, Mark?
I think this is Cheryl Garrett. I think if the recipients of these comments only count them, it won't matter. If they read them, it might have some impact, because I think so many of us on this call and so many voices that we hope to raise and bring forth are folks that have been non-fiduciaries and they've worked in the fiduciary space, and they came forward and said, you know, it has not hurt me in a business standpoint. So the argument about becoming a fiduciary is so problematic that, you know, you can't do business and it will make it impossible for middle income or people with more modest means to have access to a financial advisor. Well, I call bull hockey to that, because if the advice that they were getting up until now was merely incidental to a sales pitch, it's not the kind of advice they needed in the first place. So to get real objective advice, they need a fiduciary, and there are options as Financial Engines, myself, and other organizations and other participants have mentioned. But the overwhelming majority of people out there that hold themselves out as financial advisors or whatever term they use, they are giving advice, but they aren't held to the fiduciary standard. The public doesn't know the difference. And I think by having more of these stories shared by individual practitioners who have been on you know, many different distribution channels and can share their personal experience that, you know, it didn't cause me to go out of business. It didn't cause me to have to only work with wealthy people. You know, some of the typical, the reasons why it won't work, the reasons why we got to keep to the status quo. Actually, the reasons they keep to the status quo is it's fat and happy. why change? It's simple and very lucrative. But if you had to meet to a fiduciary standard, it's going to be less lucrative. You can't sell less than, you know, ideal type of things, and you've got a lot more responsibility to really uphold what truly is in the best interest of somebody and not just have some, you know, name or title or whatever they call the best interest, or BI. I think BI is a better code for it than best interest, because I can't bring myself to use best interest standard as compared to fiduciary standard. I truly believe that the person on the street would vote for, oh, give me the best interest one. That sounds perfect. When indeed they just don't understand what they're missing. And unfortunately, the sales pitches coming from the non-fiduciaries help to enforce that. And so this is just regulation gone wrong. And I do not want to have to have the public deal with this confusion. It's already
confusing.
We have
another question.
We don't want it worse.
Thank you. Thank you, Cheryl. We have another question from Andrew. And Andrew, I'll read your question. Melanie has another question. Mark, if you have a follow-on, please type it into the box and I can take you off mute if you would like to. But here's the question from Andrew. So speaking of competition, if this proposal passes, will that hurt the RIA business model, meaning that a competitive business advantage that RIAs have now being fiduciaries would be muddled in the public eye? So maybe, Frankie, you're a practitioner. Do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that the blurred lines that this proposed rule would create between brokers and RIAs would definitely hurt the RIA business, because it's creating an overall inefficiency in the marketplace. It's creating confusion amongst consumers. And I think it's going to hurt the industry overall as a whole. To the extent that there is any confusion amongst the consumer as to who they're dealing with and who has their best interest at heart, when the RIA is held to this fiduciary standard, you know, I don't think that's good for the RIA business at all. And I think it hurts even more the consumer side, because you know, the question of where to go to get unbiased, objective advice, you know, it's not clear to them. And so they're actually the ones that will be hurt the most by this.
So, Frankie, this is Brian. If I could just add to that, I'm heading out on vacation tomorrow. And every good vacation, from my perspective, starts at a Walmart. When I walk in, and I know I'm getting...
You really know how to throw it, Brian.
Don't worry. I'm getting somewhere with this. But we're over time anyway. It's not official. When I walk in there, I have a good sense that just about everything that I'm going to buy is going to be reasonably priced. I know that they're attuned to the model of competition, and I feel pretty comfortable. And my kids have a good chuckle at some of the stuff that I'll come up with out of that store pre-vacation. At the end of the day, customers and clients and investors are going to be far more willing to put their trust and confidence in a professional if they know what they can expect. And so over the short term, if this proposal does go through, I do believe that broker dealers will gain a competitive advantage, because they're essentially going to be able to sell 14 ounces of product and call it a pound, right? But over time, I have to believe that customers will start to become wiser as to the fact that, well, they're calling it best interest, but that's funny because it doesn't quite seem that they're acting in my best interest. So I think there is a hazard that over the short term that broker dealers do gain. But I think over the long term, I think that hazard, the perception of that hazard, is probably overstated. I think what's also interesting, I mentioned in the beginning of my comments, is that you'll note about 10 to 20% of each person's comments are a bit distinct from one another. And Melanie really honed in on that with her very first question when she asked about the harmonization of standards between brokers and advisors. If you recall, a few years ago, that was a big deal. And it's still kind of a big deal for some of us. So I think that if you polled those of us on the phone Roughly half of us would believe that there should be a unified standard between brokers and advisors. And the other half either don't really care all that much or feel strongly that there should be two distinct standards. The reason that we are all coming together, not to speak on behalf of the rest of my panelists, but I think that the reason that Knut pulls us all together here is that here's what we can agree on. What we can agree on is we don't want consumers being sold something different than what's being delivered. And that's what we're on the precipice of right here. Thanks.
We have another quick question from Melanie. So anybody who wants to circle back around to Andrew's question about competitive landscape and also answer this one, Melanie wants to be sure that this is what the panelists feel. So maybe we should go around the room in this order. Let's go with Brian, Paul, go backwards on the slide deck, you guys. So it'll go Brian, excuse me, David, Christopher, Frankie, Cheryl, Jeff, Patty, Knut, and Bob, if you've made it and you can speak, we would love to hear from you. The question from Melanie is, so does the panel believe Reg BI will not change? Brian.
Well, you got me at a rough part of the day. So I do believe that with vociferous industry and lots of comment letters that are written to share the perspective of investment advisors, I do believe that Reg BI will change.
Okay. David.
This is David. I firmly believe it will change as well.
Christopher?
I would agree with that as well. They're going to receive a ton of comment letters, and I think there will be changes to the reg for sure.
Frankie?
I agree with the comments made here. I think it will change with this letter writing campaign and making the SEC aware of the importance of this matter.
Cheryl?
I hope it will change. I'm not nearly as confident.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, I would just say ditto. I think we have a very vocal and powerful side of the industry, and you know, as long as we provide the technical assistance it's asked for in the comment request, then you know it has to change.
Patty?
I'm between Cheryl and Jeff and the others in this. My concern has been, and I've expressed it many times, I use this expression of straightening your halo. My concern is that the SEC sees the RIA world as straightening their halo, and they discount us. In the times I've been to DOL and to the SEC, that's what I've experienced, and I've had questions that just made the hair on my neck stand up. With that being said, I think the only way that it's going to change, and I mean only way, is passionate voices like ours that mm-hmm. give personal stories like ours that can show harm, that can bring the message. And Cheryl and I have said it. We both know all the models. And you can absolutely have a commission, which I don't think they want to do away with the commission model, nor do I think that they have to do away with the commission model. That's the thing. Commissions aren't bad. What makes commissions unacceptable is the advice that they're being given that's not in the client's best interest to buy a product that is full of commission that only helps the broker and hurts the client. That's when commission gets bad. So for me, we've got to have voices that tell the story, short and passionate.
Thank you, Patty. Knut, last one to weigh in on this, and then there's one final question and we'll shut down. Go ahead, Knut.
Yes, it will change only though at the margins. And something else to be fearful of all the things to be fearful of, is that we'll see this marginal nuance change, and it will be celebrated internally at the SEC as a huge movement to get there to get what they need. But the related question should be, what happens, you know, if it doesn't change? And I think what happens if it doesn't change is that it doesn't get passed, period. And I think I think that's part of the picture. But so anyway, that's how I would look at it today.
Kunal, maybe we can urge them to simply, instead of calling it best interest, maybe they could just call it fiduciary with an IE instead of a Y.
Oh, boy.
Very good, Brian. Very good.
Sorry, maybe I'm already in vacation mode. Sorry.
You're on vacation mode. Good for you.
But we have to talk way outside the box to find a solution.
Yeah.
We have one last question, and this is going to be only for the practitioners on the line. So it'll be Patty, Frankie, and David for this one. And if I've forgotten anybody, Cheryl, you want to be counted in as a practitioner on this?
If
for people who are currently practicing. Okay, you can have the closing word if David, Frankie, and Patty don't nail this one. So this is from Andrew. For the advisors on the line here today, how do you explain what a fiduciary is to prospective clients? Do you use the term best interest as part of your explanation? And that'll go to Patty first.
Thank you for asking that question, Andrew, because I actually have had this happen when I was at an FI 360 conference and someone heard us talking, one of the wait staff, and said, Patty, what is fiduciary? And I said, it's someone that puts your interest first. What's best for you is all that matters. What does that sound like? Best interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we describe it, because those are words people understand. When you go down the legalese, duty of loyalty, duty of care, and all that, people's eyes glaze over. You say we put your interest ahead of our own. We only do what's best for you.
Okay, Frankie.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, Patty. And, you know, we speak in similar terms. And one of the additional areas that we go to is we explain very clearly how we're compensated. And when we show the client, because, I mean, everyone within ACP operates under a retainer fee model. So when we point out how we're very clear and transparent with how we're compensated, and when we show them, hey, your fee is this and it doesn't change no matter what the advice we give to you, that clarifies it pretty quickly in their head. And just to provide, you know, a quick anecdote to that, I mean, we had a client who was looking to purchase a new house, and, you know, since our fee is not impacted based upon solely the assets that we manage with them, we were able to look at all of the options and provide them with totally unbiased advice, which ended up being, you know, taking, you know, money out of their portfolio in order to, you know, purchase this house. And so I think when you show how you're compensated, and, you know, because there's nothing embedded in there, that usually makes the difference pretty stark in their eyes.
Okay, thank you, David.
I pretty much take the time to walk somebody through the genesis of our firm and the evolution of my career. And I basically say that in almost 25 years of practicing, and anybody who's ever managed money would say this, you know, I've made plenty of wrong decisions. What I mean by that is I sold when I should have bought, or I bought when I should have sold. But one of the things that I can say I pride myself on is I've never made a decision with the wrong intent. And when I was in a wirehouse, we always acted like a fiduciary. But I tell people, I may have acted like a fiduciary, but I was not, and the incentives were not aligned to put your interests ahead of mine. That was a moral high ground, if you will, that I and my team walked on. In our current capacity, this is not a moral high ground. We have a legal obligation, as stated in our ADV, in our true fiduciary principles, that we are required by law to put your interests in front of every single decision that we make for you. And we are regulated to that by the SEC. We have put it down in writing. And should we violate that, I tell people I've got 32 people outside my office who rely on me for their daily bread, and you know, that is a burden that we wear as well. So we make very clear that what a fiduciary is, the differentiator between a fiduciary and someone who can provide a fiduciary service or act like a fiduciary. And something clicks. And, you know, I will flippantly ask them to simply send an email to your broker and ask them if they will serve you as a fiduciary in the legal sense, and see if you get a response back. And if you don't, you should ask a question.
Thank you. We are over time. Thank you for everybody for staying. If anyone wants to stay around or ask a question, please do it now. Knut, thank you for being the leader to bring this group together. Thank you to our panelists and everybody who supported this call today. The slides and the recording will be automatically emailed to all who attended today, and you can follow up individually with any of the people here on the line or with me, Marie Swift, at impactcommunications.org. Thank you so much, and we wish you a good day.